Hi everyone, Kelsey Little here, host of True Stories of Good People. I just wanted to take a minute before we start today's episode to connect with you all kind of one-on-one about what's going on in the world right now. Obviously, the COVID-19 crisis has caused drastic changes across the whole world. We've just never seen anything like this in our lifetimes, and it can be nerve-wracking. I just really wanted to let you all know that from the bottom of my heart, I am sending you so much love during this scary time. It's okay if you're feeling nervous, it's okay if you're frustrated, it's okay if you're sad. There's so much to feel right now, but the only way that we'll get through this is together. I also wanted to note that today's episode and most others that we'll release over the next few months were recorded weeks and weeks before the virus outbreak. But you know, I just think we all need a little break from the news every once in a while to hear something nice that's happening in the world, so as always, here are some true stories of good people. Hello, and welcome to another episode of True Stories of Good People, a GoFundMe Heroes production. I'm your host, Kelsey Little. In each episode of this podcast, we sit down with someone who's making a difference in other people's lives, or who has had their life changed by someone kind. For over 25 years, Mohammed Bazik has been exclusively taking in foster children who are sick or terminally ill. Mohammed's inspiration comes from his late wife, Dawn, a former foster mother and advocate for better foster care, who passed away in 2014. Today, Mohammed honors Dawn's legacy by dedicating his every waking moment to providing a loving home for these children. Hello from Azusa, California, just outside of Los Angeles. I'm here today with someone whose story I'm so honored to share with you today, Mohammed Bazik. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your story with me today.
Thank you for having me.
So, Mohammed, you've been part of the GoFundMe family for years now. We did a video on your amazing story back in 2017 that went absolutely viral with almost 4 million views now, which is no surprise to me. And then the campaign started for you has raised over $637,000 with support from around the whole world. I'm just honored to share your story with our listeners today. And I'd love to start with something that happened to you a few years ago that kind of brought what you do into focus for you. I think you had to admit yourself to the hospital when you were experiencing some health complications. What was going on?
In 2016, in December, they diagnosed me with colon cancer.
Wow.
And I have to go to the doctors and do the test, and I went to the operation by myself because it was so scary, you know, to be by yourself, you know,
yeah,
go through all this. And because my wife died 2015, and my son, he's adult, but he's handicapped.
Yeah.
So he doesn't drive, and he's independent on me. And so I was really very scary experience for me. And this experience humbled me and feel what the kids felt by themselves in the hospital. Nobody cares about them.
Yeah.
So this experiment makes me do more and for those kids and helping them as much as I can.
Wow. Well, so you are, I mean, just to dive right into it, you are a foster father, and for over 20 years now, you've been exclusively taking in children who are permanently or terminally ill. This is such a heavy story to dive into, but I'd love to know where originally your inspiration came to do this.
I've been foster parents for 31 years.
31 years.
31 years. I have more than 80 kids came to my home.
Wow.
All of them babies. From birth, 2 weeks old, 1 month old, and all of them, since 1995, only take terminal kids with the DNR and hospice.
Wow.
And there is no hope for them from the doctors that they can do nothing for them because they know they're gonna die.
Oh my gosh.
It's just a matter of time, you know.
I learned from reading about your story that your late wife Dawn was actually a foster mother as well with you, and an advocate for better foster care in your area.
How I started, because when I met my wife in 1989, she was a foster mom because she used to live with her grandparents, and her grandparents was a foster family.
Oh, wow.
So when I met my wife, I started doing, continuing with her, you know, since 1989.
Oh, wow. So she was
I started because of her.
Oh, wow. So I think she wanted things to be better in the foster care system in general. What sorts of things was she fighting for?
We always fighting for the kids, their rights, and we're fighting for the kids that we can provide him the best care and the best equipment they need, or, you know, because most of the kids, they are handicaps, and they need a lot of machines and wheelchairs, and it's demanding a lot of, you know, machines. Some kids, they have 5-6 machines.
Wow.
And you have to fight for this, and to so you can get the best equipment for them.
Wow. So somewhere along the way, you two made the decision together to only take in children who were experiencing terminal illness?
Since 1995, we took, only we decided we take kids who's terminal, who's knowing that they're going to die.
Wow.
Because those kids, nobody wants to take them.
Yeah.
Because they said, there is so many people taking kids with terminal illness, but nobody wants to take kids who's dying.
Yeah.
And the LA County, the Children's Service Department, LA County, they told me I am the only home in LA County taking kids terminal who's dying, and they know they're going to die.
The only home in LA County.
And LA County, you know how many cities? 88 cities.
Yeah.
And 11 million population in LA County.
Wow. That's a staggering number. So what was the experience like for you two, maybe the first time you took in one of these children? I imagine it's pretty emotional for you.
It's very emotional when my first kids died. In 1991, she was a little girl. She's a Mexican girl, and she has a spina bifida. And really, she died suddenly. I mean, she was okay. I remember that day. It was 4th of July. My wife was making the dinner, and I went to just a quick shower. Then I hear the noise, and I opened the door. I was even with the towel. I didn't hear what's going on. I saw the police, the fire department, the paramedic. I said, what's going on? They said, the baby died.
Oh.
What do you mean died? It was okay. And she died suddenly, you know. It was that one, my first experience with the, you know, child die in my home.
Wow.
And it really devastated me. I was crying for a long time.
Wow.
It's because we have here since I was a baby.
Yeah.
From the hospital. And really it was a very hard experience, you know.
After experiencing that is so devastating, what made you want to keep going on with this?
Because when in the beginning I used to go to the children's hospital and like volunteer, and go to the play room with the kids who's in the hospital, because a lot, so many kids, they don't have families. And the kids who is there, no family, they have no bond. They can't be bonded by nurses or doctors, because nurses have so many patients.
Yeah.
And every shift, different nurses and different doctors, you know. So there is no bond between them. And as I said, the kids who were knowing going to die, and the doctor gave up on them, nobody wants to take them.
Yeah.
So that's what we decided to take those kids, because they give them, you know, a home, because every kid has rights. to have family, to have mom and dad, brothers and sisters, place called home. Somebody loves them, somebody take care about them, somebody be with them until the last minute of their life in their hardship time.
It's just, I agree. And that's, it's, you really are one of a kind though. I mean, the numbers say that, and it's just, it's beautiful beyond words what you, what you're doing. Well, so I'd love to know, what kinds of things as a foster parent do you need to prepare for caring with a child who is facing terminal illness? Are there any things you had to like learn how to do that you didn't know?
We used, my wife and I, we used to teach at Citrus College foster parents, who the new foster parents.
Oh, you taught them?
We usually, we teach those classes. It's the 18 hours mandatory you have to take. And we used to tell the foster parents who want to be foster parents, I tell them first time, you have to build your life and your husband's life or your wife's life or your kid's life around the kid's life.
Yeah.
Otherwise, don't take the kids because it's not going to be fair for that kids. Let somebody who can devote his time to these kids, because these kids, the medical kids, they really, it's a 24/7 job.
Yeah.
It's not one day or, and I tell them if you are thinking gonna take vacation or you're gonna in the weekend party or no, don't take the kids.
Yeah.
Because you don't get, you're not gonna have this time, and if you take the kids and doing these things is not fair for the kids because you will not gonna get the proper care, you know.
Yeah. So it's an around the clock job.
It's an hour job. Believe me, and since 2010, I never day have day one day off.
Wow.
Nope.
You're always, always.
I never
busy
had one day
children.
Off. Because, I mean, I have nurses from Monday to Friday from 8 to 4.
Wow.
8 hours a day. And we can know nurses. And so from 4, like today, from 4 until tomorrow, 8 o'clock, by myself.
Wow.
And a weekend by myself. And I am a mom and a dad.
Yeah.
I have two responsibility. Plus my son, he's a handicap.
Yeah.
And he's in depending on me 100%.
Wow.
So it's not easy life. And seriously, I have no vacation.
Wow.
Since 2010.
Oh my gosh. How many children are there in the foster care system who are facing terminal illnesses and don't get matched up with families?
Foster kids, they said, instead, according to the Children's Service Department, said in any given day, there are about 3,000 kids needs homes.
Wow. That is... About, so what happens if there isn't someone like you who can take them in?
They stay in the hospital facility, medical facility, or in the hospital. And kids really... When they stay in the hospital and medical facility, they have no bond. But if we get home, they have bond with the family.
Yeah.
The family, we've been with them 24/7, you know?
Yeah.
But in the hospital, no.
Wow. It's so sad.
That's the way it is, you know?
So you mentioned your amazing wife, Dawn, passed away in 2015. I'm so sorry for your loss. But since then, you've kept on going with being a foster father by yourself to more children. Why is it important for you to keep going with this, even though you, it's just you now?
Because I know these kids, he needs help, you know, especially the kids who's in terminal illness. And a lot of them DNR, you know what does mean DNR, don't resuscitate.
Yeah.
And I have to do my part, you know, because I feel obligated, you know, to this. And I really devoted my life for those kids, you know.
Yeah. I'd love if you could share a little bit about yourself, you know, aside from this amazing thing that you do. I read that you were either born in or you came to the U.S. from Libya.
Yes.
What was your life like there?
I came 1978, time of Carter. I came as a student. Then I graduated from Utah State University. as an electronics engineer.
Wow.
Yes, and I met my wife in 1989. Then we get married. And as I said, she's the reason that I am foster father, because of her, because yeah. she's already in this work.
Yeah.
And I have so many, like in 2012, I have heart attack.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, and I am very diabetic also. And 2006, I have the diagnosed me the colon cancer.
Yeah.
I had to go to the hospital and operate one day before my birthday.
No, that's horrible.
Yes, and before the Christmas. I went to the operation December 20.
Oh my gosh.
2006. One day before my birthday and 4 days before Christmas.
And you had to go by yourself?
By myself, because my wife died and I have no family.
Yeah.
In the United States, except my son. Was my son, he's a handicap. He's 22 years old. Mm-hmm. He goes to Sisters College, but he has brittle bone disease, which he break every bones in his body.
Oh my gosh.
And he can't walk, he can't stand up. And he has dwarfism. Dwarfism, he's very small. Even he's almost got to be 23. And he's the size of 4 years old kid.
Wow.
He's the smallest kid in college, and he's the smallest kid and was in high school.
Yeah.
He's really, I mean, even now he's almost 23, he weighs like less than 60 pounds.
So you're not only you're just a full-time dad, but to your own son and to foster children.
Yes.
Wow. That is a big workload.
No, but really early, like in when 2000, when my wife got sick, she started having seizures. And I used to taking care of my wife and my three kids.
Wow.
I was juggling by myself. At that time, I have no nurses. I have no helps.
You're just the definition of a caretaker.
Yeah, because, you know, family comes first, you know.
Yeah.
Family is the priority number one.
What was Dawn like? Would you be able to share a little bit about her?
She is really very good with kids, and she loves kids, and she loves what she's doing, and she always advocate for those kids, you know, try to fight for them, really. And she was also teaching those courses for foster parents who are going to be
wow.
a new foster parents, you know. We used to teach for many colleges. We used to teach Citrus College, Children's Hospital Los Angeles, Mountain Sack, Chevy in Pomona.
Wow.
And also in another center in Pomona, and also in Martin Luther King Hospital.
Wow.
Yeah.
I remember reading in one of your other interviews that you said she was funny because she was afraid of things like spiders, but she wasn't afraid of the big thing she was taking on.
She is afraid of nothing except two things. Spiders, number one.
Yeah.
And bugs.
Bugs.
But spiders, even in Halloween time, she didn't go outside.
What?
Because the decoration in the stores, and she didn't go.
Really?
Even she watched in the TV, she turned it off or turned her face.
Wow.
She can't even see it in the picture.
Wow.
Yep. She's petrified of, I mean, if she's like, go in the backyard and water and find spider. Muhammad, come, bring your shoes. I mean, she's petrified.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, and also she's allergic to the bees.
Oh yeah.
One time she was driving and bees entered to the car.
Ooh.
She stopped the car in the middle of the road and asked people to get the bees.
I think I would do that too. That sounds scary.
Yeah.
You know,
she was a really good foster mom.
Yeah, I mean, she's so brave to me in the other parts of her life, and just in general, with all of her advocacy as well, and just fighting for these kids. I think that's the height of bravery.
Yeah,
boldness.
We have to, because I mean, those kids need a lot of things. You know, it's not normal kids. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, those kids with terminal illness, they need a lot of equipment, you know, to can make their life easier.
Yeah.
Because those kids born, this is not the kid's choice, you know.
Yeah.
To born like this, to be like this. I mean, from the first minute they born, they have medical problems.
Yeah.
They have suffering a lot. So they need somebody who share this with them, you know, and make sure and assure them that they are safe and there's somebody loves them,
yeah,
and somebody with them and somebody care about them no matter what.
You said you've fostered 80 children over the years. Are you able to share, like, what kinds of, are they all going through similar things or all different sort of situations?
Yeah, I mean, every kid, they have different diagnoses, you know? I mean, some of them, you know, they have TRIX, G2, central line, blind and deaf, seizures, colostomy bag,
yeah,
and no brain. I have about more than 80 kids came to my house.
Wow.
And 11 of them died in my home.
Oh my gosh.
11 kids.
That's so incredibly difficult. I can't even imagine.
Well, I mean, a lot of people ask me, why you just bury a kid and you go take another kid,
yeah,
who's dying. It's, I believe, okay, in my belief as a Muslim, there's three things written on you and me and in every human being. When, where, and how. When we gonna die, where we gonna die, and how we gonna die. This is written on me and you and every human being,
yeah,
before we born. You know what they call here trimester, when the fetus became a human? There's things written on us. So there is no escape.
Yeah.
Everybody on the line. We don't know where is our turn come. So as a human being with these kids, I do my best for them.
Yeah.
And I try to give them the best care. And I have limitation. They leave the rest to God. It's out of my limitation, you know.
Yeah.
So there is nothing I can do. I better so I can, I am happy that I be part of their life.
Yeah.
And share their life with them for the time they need somebody. And when they die, that is act of God. There, yeah, is nothing I can do.
Yeah.
No medication, no hospital, no technology, no doctors gonna buy you 1 minute.
Right.
When your time's come, that's it.
Yeah. How many children other than your son are you currently caring for?
One.
What would you say is a typical day for you like? I mean, you already shared that you haven't had a vacation in many, many years, and it's round the clock kind of thing.
The typical day, really, I mean, it starts 8 o'clock in the morning for making me do the medication, give the bed, the dressing, and it takes, and then the machines, the oxygen, the suction machine, the nebulizer for lungs, the feeding machine, because they are in feeding machine 24/7,
wow,
oxygen 24/7, suction all the time. But the worst part for me, at night I can't sleep if they don't sleep.
Yeah.
Because she needs to be suctioned as long as she's awake, because she has no brain.
Yeah.
And the brain doesn't tell her to swallow, so she chokes in her saliva.
Oh my gosh.
And if you don't suction her, I sleep with her head to head like this.
Oh my gosh.
And if she's up, I have to be up. If she's awake, if she's asleep, that's the only time I sleep. Because if you sleep and you don't suction her, she could choke and die in her saliva.
Oh, that's so scary.
And she have seizures, minimum 4 seizures a day.
Oh.
And she's blind and deaf. And she has no brain. She had dislocated hips. She has club foot. I mean, she has all. She usually she used to be impatient.
Yeah.
Kid, but because of I have the experience, and so that's why they let her to be a outpatient.
Wow.
With me.
Do you?
I have three kids before her, the same diagnosis.
Oh, really?
Three of them died. Some of them lived 8 days. Some of them lived 4 years and 6 years and 4 months.
Wow.
Yes. I mean, because those kids really, with this diagnosis, and, it's a matter of time, you know, it doesn't stay long. They, because from the beginning, from his first day I get them, they tell me, you are lucky this kid will stay a few weeks or a few months.
Wow.
And that's it. And some of them don't live long life.
Do you feel like the kids that you take in are your own?
What?
Do you feel like the kids that you take in are yours?
It is the really the big factor of me coping doing this work.
Mm-hmm.
I never took kids. I feel that he's a foster kids. I always, all the kids come to my home, so I treat them like biological kids.
Yeah.
Because it's not fair to treat them differently from your normal kids or other kids or your biological kids.
Yeah.
You know? So that's why really keep me going, because of this.
Is that something that you tried to convey to people in your classes as well?
Well, we used to tell the people who's going to be foster parents, if you are take a kid, you think you're going to be rich, you are in the wrong minds to get out.
Yeah.
Because there is no, you're not going to be rich.
Yeah.
If you want to have party and going vacation, and especially with the medical kids, please don't take the kids, because it's not going to work and it's not fair. Let somebody who can devote their time and their everything for those kids, you know, because those kids, they need the most.
Yeah.
Because it's 24/7 work.
Yeah.
I mean, like sometimes I don't sleep at night. And next day, I have to go to Children's Hospital, Los Angeles.
Wow.
I have to drive 30 miles one way. It doesn't matter if I am tired.
Yeah.
Or I am sick. Not, I have to go.
Wow.
And I have in the morning, I have to get up early to give them medication, give them bath, and do their machines, their oxygen, their feeding. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You have to do it.
Do you ever get overwhelmed? I feel
many
like,
times, yeah. Especially after my wife, you know,
yeah.
It's really is very hard job, you know. I mean, if you want to go outside, you have to take everybody with you, with the machines.
Yeah.
I mean, you imagine take kids 15 medication a day.
Wow.
In the morning and 12 o'clock and 4 o'clock and 8 o'clock.
Wow.
And 4 machines. That's almost impossible, you know?
Yeah.
I only do my things when if I have nurses from 8 to 4.
Yeah.
And the weekdays, if I need to do, I have to do these things outside the house. I have, like, getting medication from the pharmacy, take the kids to the hospital, to the doctor appointment, or have appointment for me or for my son, or, you know?
Yeah.
Or go grocery, or all this. I have to do it in certain period of time, you know?
Do you ever have time to do anything for yourself or anything
no.
like that? Wow.
No, seriously, even when I was when was my wife alive?
Yeah.
We can't go together.
Yeah.
Because there's nobody watch the kids.
Wow.
Then we have two choice: take everybody, or she goes and I stay, or she stay I go.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, because there is, I mean, you have 2-3 kids with those machine medication. Where are you going to go?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like regular kids. Okay, let's go. Everybody jump in the car. Let's go. Nope. You have to prepare like half an hour to an hour, prepare the medication, the machine, so you can take with you. Sometimes it doesn't worth it to go.
I know you've been doing this for so long and this is just your regular life, but it's so incredibly selfless, and it's no wonder your story has touched people all over the world, because I really think that you're a one-of-a-kind human being. I really do.
I'm really happy that I'm part of their life, you know.
Yeah.
And I can help them, and I do my best, for them.
How long do you plan to keep being a foster father?
I'll be foster father the rest of my life.
Wow.
As long as I am healthy and I can provide good care for them. There's two conditions. It's very important, you know. If I am healthy, because if I am not healthy, I can't do nothing for them.
Yeah.
If I can't provide good health for them, let them somebody take care of them and give them good health and take care of them, the right way, what they need.
Is there anything that you've learned from these experiences and doing all of this work that maybe like a lesson or something that has stuck with you that you'd like people to take away if they're listening to our conversation today?
Really, I believe, as I said, the kids need somebody in their life, because a lot of kids, they're born and their mom left. I mean, so many kids came to my house, no names.
Oh my gosh. What
their name? Baby boy, baby girl. They even the family doesn't bother to name them. And those kids, as I said, they are not their choice, to be like this or to be leave alone. And my operation and when I went to the hospital, I was in their shoes and felt what they feel, those kids, be alone by yourself, I mean, you are adult, you are scared. What do you imagine, kids, just babies?
Yeah.
Or a few months, a few years old, and nobody can call mom or dad or be with them all the time. That's really this. It humbled me and encouraged me and make me do more for those kids. As long as I can do. As I said, as long as I am healthy and can provide good care. And also, from my story came out, I was hoping to inspire a lot of people to extend their hand and be foster parents, be taking those kids, unfortunate kids. Sometimes the society forgot about them. And those kids really need somebody. And I hope people encourage from my story to do for those kids and give them help. Those kids, he needs a lot of help, and to live at least comfortable life, because it's not a good life for somebody who's being alone, especially little kids, and he's terminally ill.
Wow.
And I have 11 kids died. I still visit them in the cemetery. I go from time to time, I visit them.
Wow.
Because I know nobody gonna visit them. Because a lot of them, they never see their family. I mean, it's like a lot of them is orphan. Nobody. So I still visit them from time to time. Because those kids, nobody really cares about them. I mean, what a life. You're born with no names. You don't even have your identity. Nobody knows about you. It's like you are a number. Even not a human being. This is not a life for a kid, you know. Especially his who's suffering from the minute they born. And also, I want to add something. I have 6 sisters and 3 brothers.
Wow.
Big family. I am here by myself. We, you know, I am from Libya, which we have civil war now for 9 years.
Wow.
My sisters, 5 sisters, they established called Libyan Orphan Organization since 2012. They have resisted in their organization more than 650 kids.
Oh my gosh.
Orphan kids.
Wow.
Because of the war.
They're doing work just like you.
Yeah, since 2012.
That's incredible.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Family of angels.
Yeah. They called me so many names. You know how many, I mean, some things, I mean, really, really, like, for example, an atheist man. He said, I don't believe in God. But I read your story. I hope there is God, so it will reward you.
Wow.
And an atheist teacher, she said, I'm an atheist, I don't believe in God, but I read your story, forced me, and said, I never in my life to tell somebody, God bless you. But I read your story, forced me to say, God bless you.
Wow.
And another woman, she said, I was telling them, you know, I will show, I mean, my story, you know, as I am Muslim. And I will show to the people and tell people the true face of Islam. She said, she told me, she sent me a message, said, you are my face of the Islam, of a Muslim.
Wow.
And they called me Mama Teresa, Muslim Mama Teresa. They called me angel without wings. They called me angel walking among us. And they told me you are doing God work. And they also told me you are doing Jesus work. A lot of, you know, I mean, I used to, the GoFundMe used to be send me a printout.
Oh, you have the comments.
The comments.
Yeah.
In the beginning, I used to like spend 3-4 hours, 5 hours reading them and cry. I mean, so many people, they say so many good things, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know. It's you always they're always good more than bad. And
yeah.
You know? Always there is good more than bad in the world, you know.
Thank you so much to the incredible Muhammad for coming on our podcast. To learn more about his story and watch his moving video documentary, please visit GoFundMe.com/heroes. Thank you so much for listening to True Stories of Good People, a GoFundMe Heroes production. If you are inspired by today's story, please help us out by heading over to iTunes and leaving us a rating or review and subscribing to the show. And if anyone you know loves inspiring stories, please share our podcast with them. It means the world to us. For more inspiring stories just like the one you heard today, please visit the GoFundMe Heroes Hub at GoFundMe.com/heroes and be sure to subscribe to our mailing list so you can get heartwarming stories delivered straight to your inbox. You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at GoFundMe Heroes. Also, we love to hear from listeners, so if you have any feedback, suggestions, or questions, you can write to us at podcast@GoFundMe.com. Special thanks to Century Star Studios in Glendora, California, where this episode was recorded, and to our editing team at Cloud Studios in Seattle, Washington. We'll be back next time with more true stories of good people. Talk to you then!